Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, you probably ignore a lot of those be careful emails that you get from your work's IT department or your internet service provider. We get it. You're savvy. You don't fall for Nigerian princes or phony Canada Revenue Agency letterhead. Of course, that's only until you do, because today's phishing emails are getting ever more sophisticated, and they aren't out to give you a virus anymore either. They are out to lock down your whole organization's servers and hold them for ransom. Everything. And you're either going to have to pay or start from scratch, because the cops can't catch these crooks and you're not going to crack their code. If you ever wondered what Ontario's favorite party town and a Winnipeg area mattress dealer have in common, this is it. This is the next level of cybercrime, and we are not ready to fight it. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Kyle Edwards of McLean's has been trying to wrap his head around what's called Bitcoin ransoms and figure out what we can do when we're hit with them. So Kyle, first question, what happened in Wasaga Beach?
On April 30th of this year, Wasaga Beach, it was a beautiful day. Like, from what I recall, I looked at the weather record.
Right.
It was a nice day. It was probably one of the like warmer days of kind of just getting over winter. It was very warm, looking like a beautiful day.
And their big season is about to start,
right? Yeah, exactly. And the town's folk, then the town workers at town hall, they all came in to the office, and a lot of them started noticing these strange messages on their computers. Some of the computers had them, not all of them did. So Jocelyn Lee, the town treasurer, she comes into work and she turns on her computer. The first thing she wanted to do was transfer over different documents that she took home to work on. So she plugs in her USB. And immediately she notices some of the files on her computer, or all of the files rather, they all came with a duplicate. And each time she tried to click on those files, it wouldn't open. The screen would kind of come up blank. It looked like there were nothing on them. People in town hall told me that, you know, they kind of just thought that maybe they saved their files wrong. But eventually kind of evolved into something else. There were these notes on some of the computers, basically telling them that all of their files had been encrypted, and that they had to send an email to a contact that was in the note, and that they would have to pay a ransom to basically decrypt all of their files, because immediately they started noticing, and this all unfolded within about a couple hours, and they immediately realized that this was not just some standard computer virus. This was something larger, something bigger, and eventually they realized it was what was called a ransomware attack.
So this is the entire town's municipal computer system?
Yes.
Which means what for that town?
Oh, it means everything for that town. All of their financial information, their cemetery records, official town records, all the official documents that make it one of the most popular beach towns in Ontario. Personal information, planning, development drawings, all these sort of things that were really crucial and took years and years and years to craft and make them as they were today. Not only were those records locked away, but they also just couldn't go on their computers or use email or, you know, do things as they would have done if everything were normal. A lot of people had to work off their phones. They had to kind of get creative with the way they were. Yeah, they had to use paper, and you know, they had to write out receipts. It kind of disrupted their day-to-day work lives.
So what is ransomware?
Ransomware is a form of malware that will infect a person's computer or server, and essentially it will encrypt or lock away a person's files. So you won't be able to get in them. It will essentially, I guess the word to use is, it will encrypt them. And the only way to really decrypt those files is to pay the ransom in order to get the key from the cyber criminal that you're dealing with.
So they just lock up your stuff in a digital safe, essentially, and they're the only ones that can get it out.
Exactly. In a lot of cases, I think some people kind of have the misconception that if you don't pay the ransom, the cyber criminal will release it to the world. And that may be like a kind of scare tactic, but generally that's not the case. You just won't ever be able to get your stuff back.
Which is for any kind of organization of any size.
Yeah. And for any organization, it's incredibly important because it will cost more money to rebuild everything that you lost and create all those files that you lost. And with certain companies, recount your stock. It'll take time and money and it'll cost more than the ransom itself in most cases.
Why are we talking about it now?
In recent years, I think you've seen a lot of high-profile cases in the media. There was one this year. The city of Atlanta was hit by a massive ransomware attack. All of its different departments, like its police department, its municipal courts, they all had to, you know, as you said, go back to working on paper, kind of doing things the old way. I read in one case they weren't able to issue warrants for police officers. And so it really disrupted like a lot of different sectors within that city. It was, you know, a widely reported story. It was quite incredible, actually, that all this was done and the cyber criminal only wanted somewhere around $50,000. And I don't think Atlanta ever really paid the ransom. And for that reason, I think they've paid immensely. There are some reports that suggest they've paid somewhere around $3 million to kind of recover from the attack. Because there are ways to recover. It'll just cost you a lot of money.
Who falls victim to these attacks? Who are they targeting?
Generally, I think for these types of cyber criminals, they will target individuals or companies that are likely to pay the ransom, like, you know, a local government or institutions like hospitals and social services. And these places have been hit by ransomware attacks in the last few years. And I think that's why you're kind of seeing more and more stories about ransomware.
Do the victims go to the police, or what happens when the police get involved? What can they do?
The police can't really do anything. And I think that's also a big part of the story. The RCMP, the OPP, the OPP told me that they have never issued a ransomware-related charge. The RCMP didn't tell me directly that they've never issued a ransom-related charge, but I have reason to believe they haven't.
Wow.
And for the OPP, one of the questions I had for their director of cybercrime was how long would an investigation like this take? And he told me that it would take somewhere around a year or more to investigate a crime like this. And that's an incredibly long time.
And that's one crime like that.
That's tracking one suspect.
When you started looking into this, how easy or hard was it to find other victims and other places that had been hit by these kind of attacks? And, you know, give me some examples of like what kind of stories you found.
Yeah, well, I found Wasaga Beach just by small news story. And so I kind of called up Wasaga Beach and said, hey, I heard you guys had come under attack. And they sent me a link to basically a breakdown of how much they paid, how it all went down. And they said, yeah, next week there's going to be a meeting. So I went up there to go witness this meeting about their recovery of their attack. And as for some of the other cases, like David Keem out in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Who's David Keem?
He owns Best Sleep Center in Winnipeg. They have two locations in Winnipeg and one just outside the city, I believe. And I remember David Keem's kind of radio hits growing up because I'm from Manitoba.
Right.
And I thought they were always really funny. He'll always end each segment with like, you'll find us. And I thought that was so amusing. So I discovered David Keem by a small breaking news story in local media. So I called him up and said, hey, David, I read that you were a victim of a ransomware attack. And he kind of just shrugged it off. It was like, oh, yeah. It was no big deal, essentially, to him. Because he's a businessman, and you kind of see that from him. He wears a pinstripe suit, thick mustache, and
he runs a mattress store.
A mattress store, and he has a great picture of himself on McLean's.ca. But and he was hit by this ransomware attack. His first instinct, naturally, was to negotiate with the cyber criminal, and they eventually agreed to, I think it was about $1,000 Canadian in Bitcoin.
In Bitcoin.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people who are victims of this attack, of this sort of cybercrime, they don't really know how to navigate cryptocurrency, in this case, Bitcoin.
Right.
Because a lot of, I guess just a lot of Canadians are generally unfamiliar with how it works. Essentially,
I want you to do this in 50 words or less. What is Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is a digital currency that bypasses governments, banks, and third parties. It is essentially not governed by any sort of outside organization. It's become really popular in recent years. It's incredibly volatile. Its value goes up by the minute. But these days, it's not really treated as a currency as much as it is of like a resource. Like one of my colleagues described it best. It's treated like gold or something of that nature. So David Keem from Best Sleep Center was a Bitcoin person, he told me. He was incredibly proud to know Bitcoin well. And I think for that reason, that gave him a better position than I think most people, because a lot of people like Wasaga Beach had to bring in consultants. They had to pay people to help them go through this process.
Right. I wouldn't know where to get my hands on Bitcoin. I guess I wouldn't even ever get my hands on it.
Right.
But you know what I mean.
And I wouldn't know how to get my hands on Bitcoin either. But David Keem knew how to get it done. So all he really had to do was kind of negotiate with this cybercriminal on how much money he was going to pay these people to essentially unlock his data. And he did that.
And $1,000 doesn't sound like much compared to losing everything that you're keeping, your store's inventory and sales receipts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And so this whole thing for him lasted about a week, and things eventually went back to normal after that.
So if the amounts are going to be as small as $1,000, the people behind these attacks are probably doing it a lot. Do we have any sense of the bigger picture, how much this is on the increase? I imagine Bitcoin has helped with that.
Right. Yeah. Bitcoin is a totally legit currency. Law-abiding citizens can use it to purchase anything, a lot of different things. But in this case, Bitcoin, from some of the experts that I spoke to, has essentially allowed ransomware to thrive in a lot of cases. Because it is fast, it can move across different jurisdictions in an instant. You can transfer somebody money who's on the other side of the world, essentially. And it's been kind of like the currency or the medium of exchange for many of these cyber criminals that use ransomware. The FBI has done reports on this sort of thing. And one of the statistics, they estimate that about 100,000 computers are infected every single day. And the amount of ransom payments is approaching $1 billion annually. In Canada, it's a bit more, the numbers aren't as extravagant as that, particularly because I think a lot of times victims are kind of ashamed to come forward about
that. Was going to be my next question,
things,
right? Because you feel very, first of all, you fall for a scam.
Yeah.
And then second of all, you don't know how to navigate the payment.
Right.
What kind of, if you're a business person, who's got presumably clients that trust you with some of their personal information, like, what does that do to you?
I spoke to one gentleman. He ran a software company out of his own home. And one of the reasons why he never went to police or why he didn't want to disclose his personal identity was because he was afraid of what might happen to his business. He was afraid if his clients found out that his system had been compromised by ransomware, that would affect, you know, his business, that maybe hypothetically that his clients would go elsewhere for the service that he was providing. And so that's one reality for sure. And so that might explain why only, you know, 5% of ransomware losses are reported to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Agency.
Do the police or anyone else you spoke to have any idea if there's anything on the horizon that will help them maybe eventually lay a charge against a ransomware?
I think the RCMP is, what they told me was that they're optimistic that they'll eventually lay a charge. In a lot of cases, with the OPP especially, their cybercrime division essentially is brand new. It opened at the beginning of 2018.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And in particular, it's in response to the growing rate of ransomware attacks.
It does seem a little nuts that the RCMP has not had a cybercrime unit.
And I don't really fully understand. I mean, I guess it's incredibly difficult to track these cyber criminals just because.
And most of them are not Canadian.
Yeah, they're not. These aren't necessarily local crimes, I guess you could say. These people can be anywhere in the world, and they're able to transfer that, the money that they're able to get from regular Canadians into different accounts all over the world at a very fast pace. They're able to launder that money in different ways and essentially avoid the authorities.
So what did the people in Wasaga Beach do?
Wasaga Beach reached out to the culprit on the other end, and the immediate response back was from the shadowy bandit was, tell us about yourself. And they sent back wasagabeach.com, their domain address, and immediately the person knew who they were. So Jocelyn Lee and other town officials, they kind of gathered together on a regular basis, kind of weighing the pros and cons of...
How long had this gone on for at that point?
The entire event lasted about 7 weeks. But in that time, whether or not they were going to pay was up in the air. They weren't really sure how to go about this. The RCMP, the OPP, basically all government organizations that deal with cybercrime advise that victims of ransomware attacks do not pay ransoms. So they were aware of that. And a lot they heard stories of victims paying the ransom and not getting any type of decryption key in return. So they were kind of aware of the risk of that, but at the same time, they would come together in meetings and they would weigh the amount of money that they'd have to pay to kind of rebuild everything from scratch. The number they threw around was minimum $500,000. The initial ransom was 11 Bitcoin, which was somewhere around $140,000 Canadian at the time. So they entered into negotiations. They said, we're going to negotiate with this person. They let the townsfolk and the community know that they were going to negotiate with the cyber criminal to get everything back. And over the course of a few days, they eventually agreed, both parties eventually agreed on 3 Bitcoin for 4 of their 11 servers, which they determined would get them as close to the way things used to be, get them back to somewhere around 95% productivity. Right. At the end of the day, they paid around $34,000 in Bitcoin ransom. They paid more than that for all the consultants they hired for this. And when they factored in their productivity losses and staff overtime hours, they paid over $250,000 and were able to essentially return back to normal.
And the lesson from this is pay attention to those emails from IT about phishing scams.
Exactly.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
Kyle Edwards, staff writer for Maclean's. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can hit us up on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Big Story Podcast. And of course, you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. And please do rate, review, tell your friends. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of 3 teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.